The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, and Chicago. And if you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Leeds.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Tim. How's Tim?
I'm doing fantastic.
Do you know what we forgot to do last week?
We forgot to do a lot of things, I'm sure, but let's go ahead and pick one.
Well, the most important one is that we did not say that last week's show began our year number 7th on the Outspoken Cyclist.
It seems like it was just 5, so me remembering, I'm a guy, I'm not supposed to remember those things, right?
Really?
I'll make a note.
Yeah. Go us. Anyway, it's been quite an interesting ride since our first show in 2010. Ben Serrata was our first guest, if people can remember that. I want to tell everyone how grateful I am to John Carroll University, to our station manager, Mark Krieger, our past and current technical editors, Greg Pretty and Dale Armbruster, to you, Mr. McKenna, and especially to all of our listeners for being part of our journey. Thank you to everyone.
It's been a lot of fun.
It has been.
And will be as we move forward, right?
As we move forward, yeah. We've got a great show this week. I do want to mention that I was at NeoCycle this past weekend down at Edgewater Park.
Mm-hmm.
There was a drone.
Yeah.
There was a drone flying up, and I'm like, wow, I don't think I've ever seen one that was, you know, it was circling the venue. There were some really cool things there. We didn't go on Saturday because they kept saying it was going to rain and they would shut the vendor area down.
Right.
So, of course, it didn't rain until the end of the day. And I don't know if the night ride, I think the night ride did get off.
Part of it, from what I read, they last year they had to cancel it because it was so bad, but Right. Everybody still showed up and Right. Lit up their bikes anyway. And you know how Cleveland cyclists are. Damn it, we're going to do it.
That's correct. So I guess I know Sam Bell was there and a few other people I know were there. So I'm sure that they rode. They don't care, right?
Yep. You rode there. You got to ride home.
Yeah. But we were there on Sunday. It was a beautiful day. One of the prettiest days I've seen in a long time. We had a great time. So you know that I love animals.
Mm-hmm.
Especially dogs.
Right.
Yes, I have two. And there were dogs everywhere. But what was really cool is they had one of those big pools and a ramp. And dogs, you know, you throw something ahead of the retriever and they jump into the pool.
Was that part of a competition?
Well, I think it was more of a fundraiser than anything else. But yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And what was really funny was watching the dogs who couldn't wait to do it and would just, without even thinking, just jump in the water. And then the ones who'd get right up to the edge and go, no, and turn around and walk back to their owners. And the owner would pick them up and hold them and go, no, it's okay, it's okay. And throw the thing again. And the dog would run right up to the edge and go, no.
Not for me.
It was really fun. I really enjoyed that. We also picked up a yard sign that is being offered by Bike Cleveland that is asking you to, quote, watch out for bikes. I have one on our tree lawn, which may or may not be okay. It may have to be moved into the lawn, but
no,
I put it on our tree
lawn. It's okay. You have my permission.
Oh, thanks. They are evidently free for the asking, and it helps to support Bike Cleveland. So, Bike Cleveland, go. Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks to everyone who stopped by to say hello at NeoCycle, and we'll look forward to the event again next year. So this week's show, right? We have three guests, including two who are loosely affiliated with one another and are good friends.
Those are always the best.
Yeah, they are. Eric Weiss, who was the head of the East Coast Greenway, stepped down this year to pursue other things and is doing just that. He took some time off, and then he is going to be heading up the New England Builders Ball again, the only New England hand-built show. It's coming to us September 30th at the, ready? Thompson Speedway Motorsport Park. Can't you just hear that guy on the radio?
Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday. It's in Thompson, Connecticut. The Builders Ball is a celebration of bicycle frame builders and an exhibition of their work. It's held in conjunction with the KMC CrossFest. The ball is a fundraiser for the East Coast Greenway Alliance. And there we have the connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before we speak with Eric, we are going to speak with our friend Richard Fries. Now, Richard is going to be the announcer at the KMC Cyclocross Fest, right? Cyclocross Fest.
Do we have enough bandwidth for all of this, excitement?
Right, I know. But I love talking to Richard. He's always full of amazing ideas. Things just seem to happen when he's involved. As you may remember from my last conversation with him, which wasn't that long ago, he's also the head of Mass Bike. It adds another really interesting layer to his already deep involvement in cycling and advocacy, which is his, you know, big push right now. This week's conversation is going to spark some interesting and controversial ideas, I think. Some of these ideas are being sort of carried out in other parts of the world, mm-hmm. but he's hoping that we can get some of these ideas here. We'll have some news and a break, and my final guest is Kelly Hodgson. Kelly is the brand and events manager for United Cycle in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Last week, United Cycle, along with its nonprofit organization Sports Central, delivered a 53-foot tractor trailer of sports equipment with over $500,000 of worth over $500,000 to the children and families affected by a devastating fire in Fort McMurray and the community of Wood Buffalo. So, in an effort to keep the kids equipped for the school year, they made a promise after this fire to support the schools and bring some normalcy to the area as it's trying to rebuild. United Cycle and Sports Central are in it for the long haul. They even set up an office up in Fort McMurray. So we'll be on our way first to the East Coast, and we're going to talk with Mass Bike's Richard Fries. Richard, thanks again for being on the show this week.
Great to be here.
Well, we haven't caught up in a while.
Gate B at Logan Airport.
You're always either getting on a plane, getting off a plane, going somewhere.
I know
it's been a crazy summer. So tell me what's going on.
Wow. Too much. It's actually really exciting times, and yet at the same time, my education of moving from the world of enthusiast and journalist into advocate has really been amazing. And it's amazing to me what has happened in the Boston market. You know, I represent, you know, Mass Bike in Massachusetts, and what has happened relative to we've had a tiny town outside of Boston, Lincoln. I don't even know the population is so small, but popular routes for riders, two fatalities.
And, I know.
And a year that we've only had so far about six statewide, none in Boston, even though there's been a lot going on in Boston. It's quite stunning that a little town has two fatalities. So it's really awoken that suburban charity rider, club racer, that sector of cyclists has really become awoken to advocacy.
Well, as I remember, I was watching it sort of unfold, I think on Facebook, and you were heading to the one crash and the other one occurred. Did they all happen at the same time?
Well, it was crazy. I had a, we had one in the morning. Let me start over. We had just been, I was putting the finishing touches on a post on a ghost bike ceremony to be held this Saturday, September 10th, when we got media reports of a cyclist being hit in a town of Waltham, got hit pretty bad, fractured skull. And then as I'm calling the DA about that one, so I've already got two things going on, as I call the DAs about that one, the DA says, well, we just had a fatal two towns away from there. So really alarming. And all of these are situations, you know, riders that seem to have experience, riders that were doing the right thing, riding the right direction. Not certain entirely on all the details as these things are. The investigations really just it takes forever. You never get the reports. We're still waiting for investigations from March of 2015 that have not come out yet.
What do you think it holds these things up? There's the same thing going on in New York City with Matt Von Ohlin, who they know he was run down by this Camaro. They know, they have video of it happening.
And yeah. Well, I've become fond of quoting a guy named Peter Drucker, who's who says, culture eats strategy for lunch. And where some of this is, I do believe that it does. There is a backlog. There is a shortage of some officers. There's some shortage of reconstruction teams. But I'm also here to say that I'm really starting to focus on the culture of these delays. And I just don't think these get moved up the priority list. I think these are very low priorities for law enforcement. I could be wrong. I've met with the Middlesex County DA about this on another matter. And we're elevating a little bit. It was the same district attorney. So I think it's really frustrating, Dan, that this is just not given the level of priority there. And it's really sparked in me a wholesale overhaul in how I do advocacy. And really, I'm gonna bang on the enforcement drum for a long time.
I think it's a good idea. Somebody needs to do it, and you positioned fairly well to do that. And if you get results, it gives other people impetus to go after them and get results. That starts feeding on itself.
And it's really interesting. I've met with the Attorney General. We're really trying to get with every district attorney because the way they look at us, like, and please forgive me for saying this, but they look. When you bring this up to them, some of the things they look at it at you like you're like the ducks that have been hit on the head. They just don't fathom what you're talking about. Like there is the biggest case. This was the biggest, most mind-blowing case of victim blaming that goes on throughout America is when a cyclist is hit. It's like, well, what the hell were that? What were they doing there? But what we find in what we're doing research on. And what Transportation Alternatives has done amazing research on that will, I'll bring to light in a sec, is the broad spectrum of interpretation of bicycle law, motor vehicle law, we had a fatality in Cambridge, and the guy that doored a young lady, sent her into traffic where she was hit, killed by a truck, the guy drove away. The guy just like, the cops were like, okay, see you later. I'm glad to say that because we raised such a furor over that in these two instances that we just talked about that happened on the same day, same district attorney, Marion Ryan, who did meet with me, both vehicles were impounded, charges were filed in one. But again, Diane, it is the 40 years ago, if a woman was raped, they would just send some cop over to deal with it, And that cop may or may not have had any training, may or may not have known, may or may not have any idea about what to do with evidence, didn't know what to tell the victim, didn't know what the protocol was for the victim. Well, we don't do that anymore, do we?
No, that's a really interesting point. No, now it's high profile on the news, let's string him up.
Yeah, the cars have rape kits. The cruisers go out, they go, there's a real strict protocol. And what I am pushing for is I would like to see a bike and pedestrian protocol that when this happens, nobody moves. Okay, that car is done. And we're going to really look at this. And we're going to, it's not to say that that there's not pilot error on the part of bicycles or the same for pedestrians, but we need to have a strict and consistent protocol as to how do you respond to, a fatal bicycle crash. But now they're just kind of making it up. And we have seen, every one of your listeners can tell you, the broad spectrum of reaction they get from police officers out on the roadway.
Sure, sure.
Some of them are great guys doing a lot of good work.
And some of them are sort of like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, why are you on a bicycle?
You should be on a sidewalk, and you're going, wait a minute, you're the police officer. You don't know the rules.
which happens all the time.
All the time. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Richard Freese. He's at the airport, as usual, because we always catch him at the airport. He's usually somewhere around Boston, but right now, where are you, at Logan?
I'm in Logan at Boston.
Okay,
right now.
So you really are. Okay, you're heading for California. Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about the goals for MassBike. One of these is this protocol that you'd like to see happen between the police and the investigators and whatever the crashes are. What else are you doing?
You know, going into this year, we are working with our brothers and sisters in the other advocacy organizations and groups. We have a lot of them in Massachusetts that are very effective. We're very good at working as a team right now through the Vision Zero Coalition. But the one that I'm really going after, and I think I'll go down in flames, but I'm going to keep doing it until we pass it, is presumed liability. Basically, the underpinning of all great bicycle law in Europe is presumed liability, meaning the heavier vehicle is at fault.
And interesting.
Because that was as important to the Dutch and the Danes and the Germans as the infrastructure was. And that doesn't mean you're guaranteed to be at fault if you're in a cement mixer. But when the cop shows up, it's like, you're driving a cement mixer. Let's presume that you screwed up because you're the one that needs to operate with, you know, exquisite care. In America, we do it the opposite. Why didn't you get the hell out of the way?
What an interesting perspective, Richard. I love it.
Yeah. So, what we really have to attack is data. And my recommendation is you reach out to my good friend Paul Steely White at Transportation Alternative, because their December 2015 report called Justice Denied really did a deep data dive into enforcement issues in New York City. And it's alarming. They had 10,000 citations for drunk driving, and we've all vilified drunk driving appropriately. But of those 10,000 citations that were issued, drunk driving resulted in the deaths of, I want to say, 800 to 900 victims in New York City, which is terrible. Well, here's what's mind-blowing. In New York City, they only issued 40 citations, 40 for failure to yield to a bicycle or a pedestrian.
How's that
they
possible?
They only issued 40 citations, and that led to just under 6,000 deaths, like 5,900 and something deaths, were the result of failing to yield to pedestrians, or bicycles and pedestrians being struck and killed. Okay? So, killed and injured. And that's like, wait a minute, we're way out of control here. We're doing all this on drunk driving, and those 6,000 deaths or injuries are just don't even, they are, there's been only 40 citations for a failure to yield to a bike or a ped.
So what, I mean, it's kind of a mind-blowing concept even that the police are not even acknowledging in a way. It's almost like they don't care.
There's a lot of attitudinal stuff. There's a lot of marketing, a lot of lobbying, a lot of legislation. But I think that we're really making a hard press in Massachusetts to really get in front of district attorneys. You also have this crap that goes on where the district attorneys, some will say, well, you know, the police have to file the charges, not us. And the police will say, hey, the district attorney handles that investigation. So you get this ping pong, this legal ping pong game. So this is really where we need political leadership. We need to stand up. We need to be very loud, and we need to be constant.
You going to run for office?
No, this is hard enough.
I'm sorry. I just had to throw that in there.
You know, you want people to do that. You want bike riders to start running for office.
That would be nice.
In their towns, in their cities. We have some great planners. We have planning boards. We have some great city councilors. Michelle Wu in Boston is really impressive. So what we really need is we just need to get behind those candidates that are doing this hard work.
Well, and knowing that they have you in their corner, you know, they can get some stuff done. You do get things done. I have to admit, you know, for one guy, you seem to get a lot
of
stuff done. We're gonna take a left turn away from advocacy for a minute and talk about something else near and dear to your heart, cyclocross.
Yeah.
All right. Providence is coming up.
Yeah, we don't even call it Providence anymore.
I know. It's the KMC Cross Races. Yeah, it did move.
Yeah.
It did move.
KMC Cross Fest. We outgrew Providence. We outgrew them physically. We outgrew them culturally. it just became an impossible city to work in. But we were also approached by the Thompson Speedway in just over the border in Connecticut. And this is like Zolder in Belgium. This is our costs go way down. They're built to host a big event. So we're really excited about it. Our riders seem to be excited about it. Our exhibitors are showing up. And we just got to figure out how to get Diane Jenks out to New England.
Eric, you are both in my case. I promised him, if I get the dates for 2017, I will be there. I promise.
You're in.
And I know that's what he's like. He's going to hold my feet to the fire on that one. I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'll be there. But I'm pretty excited about it this year. I think it's really cool. Are you going to have that announcer who goes, Sunday, Thompson Drag Race? Are you going to have that guy?
Yeah, I love those guys. Yeah, that would be great.
Wouldn't that be cool?
We are really excited about this venue. It's reinvigorated my excitement of it. We have a grand fondo on Sunday with 19 dirt sections.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
The Builders Ball is, you know, the exhibitors have just stayed very loyal to the Builders Ball. It's going to be in a racing paddock on Friday night, and then we're going to leave those guys on display all weekend. It's
right.
Just thrilling.
Remind us of the weekend, what that weekend is.
Yeah, September 30, October 1 and 2. The weekend before Columbus Day. And, boy, are we ever – this is a great year for American cyclocross. The two World Cups,
right.
Our event moving. I think cyclocross is really starting to go big time in America.
Yeah, did you see the Vegas cyclocross event becoming a World Cup? Did that, like, surprise you?
Well, we saw it last year, and it was named the best World Cup of the calendar, I think, because those Euros love going to Las Vegas.
Yeah, that must be the reason. That's one of the reasons I'm not
that's
going.
That's it, and good for Brooke. You know, and now we have
Iowa.
We have Iowa City coming now.
Yep. John Meehan,
it's hard to call it Jingle Cross in September.
Right.
John Meehan is a fine guy. He does a great job. I'll be the announcer there.
Oh, good.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. He's a brain surgeon, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
A robotics brain surgeon.
He's like a smart guy.
He is a smart guy.
So I'm really eager to be there. And that's 1 week before our event. So we're hoping to hold our event, and I'm not going to make too many – I don't want to overpromise, but I'm meeting with the UCI in Iowa City about the 2017 year, and we want to look at the prospect of possibly opening up one of the other series, either a B-Post Bang Trophy or the Super Prestige, which are those other series in Europe. And I'm very excited to report that I'll be the announcer again at Luxembourg for the World Championships. So we have to do a call from there.
That would be fun. Or better still, maybe I'll go. Wouldn't that be nice?
There you go.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for talking with me. We will keep up with what's going on with MassBike. I like this whole idea of presumed liability. I think that if we could start changing the way people actually look at cyclists, and we need to change the culture.
Yeah, absolutely. It's critical. We just need more and more and more of these enthusiasts, these charity riders, these club racers to really support advocacy. They're really important.
Well, we'll see if we can't get them to do that. Have a safe trip out to California. Have fun on your buddy challenge, and we'll talk again.
Thanks, Diane.
All righty, Richard. Bye-bye.
All right.
Richard Fries joined me from probably the gangplank going onto a plane heading out to California. He's at Boston's Logan Airport. As always, he's just got so many cool ideas. We're going to take a real quick break. We'll be back. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
You are, and we have news. What have you got as your first item this week?
First shout-out we want to do is the 2016 National Team Pursuit Champions, Marion Cycling.
No surprise there.
No surprise. No. Congratulations to them.
Yeah, Marion, Indiana. That's great. Yep. They have a terrific college program, as I remember.
Yep.
Okay, so the not pretty story, bike jacking, like carjacking. Do you know about this?
Yes.
Yep. So two men were shot in an apparent bike jacking on the Los Angeles River bike path last Friday night. There was an attempted bike theft, and the LA Times reports that the victims, a 27-year-old man and his 47-year-old father-in-law, were riding with their wives in the Elysium Park section of the bikeway near Riverside Drive when they were confronted by two men at 8:55 p.m. According to KCBS2, the two suspected gang members demanded the men's bicycles, and when they refused to hand them over, they were both shot in the legs. What the hell? Right. Okay. The black-clad thieves, estimated as approximately 16 and 30 years old, fled with one of the bikes. Both men were transported to a local hospital, and then KNBC4 says one of the victims may be in critical condition. Their wives were uninjured. They reportedly live in the surrounding neighborhood and were simply out for an evening bike ride. While that area is generally considered safe, there have been other reports of bike riders confronted by thieves in the area in 2013. Two members of the Frogtown gang were arrested for assaulting and robbing a cyclist on the path. This should be a reminder to always use extra caution when riding on any bike path after dark where you may be hidden from public view. Yeah. You think?
Okay. Yeah, I think.
That's a terrible story.
Yes.
I hate to have to even report on that stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Got something better?
Well, cyclists in New York. New bicycle laws offer better elevator access to commuting cyclists. There were actually three new laws that passed. But the idea, and the lawmakers said, presumably if a person can fit in an elevator, so can their foldable bike. The Manhattan lawmakers said that they enjoy cycling to work themselves, some of them, not all of them, but they wanted to make elevators more available, and in many cases it initially started out as freight elevators being available, but as we know, freight elevators sometimes shut down at 6 o'clock and they don't open up early in the morning. So there are three laws that will make things that much more easy or easier for people to use their bikes if they live in apartments or their offices. And the law is requiring residential building owners to allow bicycles in their buildings, passenger elevators. And there are a couple other additions to that, but that's the gist. That's
cool.
The main thing. So
that's cool.
Good luck for them.
Bikes are getting a little respect now, huh?
Yeah.
All right. This is kind of cool. There is a crowdfunding platform called Fuel a Dream, and the newest event launch that came to my attention was when cyclists Priscilla Madden, who's 22, and Sumit Parinj, 26, met the makers of Godrej's sustainable bamboo frame bikes. An idea was born. Why not go on a journey on these very bikes across the length of the nation? The nation is India. And it would be no ordinary journey. During the ride, they would raise awareness and support for the girl child education in India, a cause close to their heart. Their aim would be to raise INR 50 lakh at the very minimum, and I don't know how much that is, to support the education of 1,500 girls for 1 year. So today they are on the journey, bringing the idea to fruition, riding from, I'm not really very good. I should be better with Indian, being a yoga teacher, right? I should know Sanskrit, but I don't know a lot.
So.
So Kanyam Kumari to Kundur Kardung La Pass on a grueling 63-day, 4,400-kilometer journey. Driven by passion and determination, the only thing they need now is your support. Of course, there is a Craig Kalfi connection, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Vijay Krishna, executive director of Lockheed Motors Group Division of Godrej and Boyce Manufacturing, traveled to Antarctica and happened upon a bamboo frame bike. And he was so inspired by the strength, agility, and design that he invited the designer of the bike, Craig Kalfi, to India to replicate the work and work on the sustainable project. Craig took Lockin's team through a special 14-day workshop specially designed by him to make the initial prototypes. He remains committed to the project and has appreciated the excellent finishes of the bike frame made by Lockin. So you can read more about it, get involved if you wish, at Cyclists for Change on fueladream.com. Kind of an interesting project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Diamondback works with Bill Nye on a series of videos aimed at beginning bike riders. The series includes 5 videos along with supportive online content covering various topics such as types of bikes, proper fit, shifting, braking basics, each hosted by Bill Nye, the science guy. The series can be found at diamondback.com/Bill-Nye, N-Y-E, Nye. And so it's great to see anybody that has that much exposure, that much of a following, to share more about cycling.
Well, so I had no idea you had a Diamondback story.
Yeah.
I have a Diamondback story.
Okay.
Okay, so the U.S. Editor-in-Chief of Bike Radar reported on this. It is a hot-looking machine. It is made by, ba-dum-bump, Diamondback. They're bringing a whopper of a new bike to the Ironman World Championships under Olympian Michael Weiss. Diamondback VP of Product Development, Michael Brown, claims the new Andean triathlon bike will, quote, outcompete anything in the market today, both in the tunnel and on the road. I am assuming he means the wind tunnel. The Andean is the product of a 2-year project whereby we set out with Kevin Kwan Studios to build the fastest triathlon bike on the market with no concern for the arbitrary limitations placed on bicycle design by the UCI, Brown said. Our CFD, computational fluid dynamics analysis, and unique best-in-class wind tunnel testing at the University of Toronto show that we've succeeded in that endeavor. The Andean's massive frame offers a truckload of storage from the flip-open trunk in the front of the crankset to the hydration and nutrition compartment on the top tube and in the cockpit. Diamondback claims the bike is faster with the storage options. This echoes a similar design philosophy to Trek, Felt, and Specialized with their respective triathlon superbikes. The frame is so massive, with fairings extending down from the down tube and behind the seat tube, that it's easy to miss the fact that the bike doesn't have seat stays or that the bike sports hydraulic disc brakes. Whether designed for time trial or triathlon, superbikes are notorious for having poor braking or at least infuriatingly tight cable routing for brake lines, if not both. Hydraulic brakes are a great solution. The Andean was designed around Head's Jet 6 Plus wheels, planning for a 24-millimeter tire in the front and 26-millimeter in the rear. The frame is built to handle 3 water bottles, 3 energy bars, 10 gel packs, tools, and a spare tube, all in an aero fashion. Notably, Diamondback is selling these bikes consumer direct in 5 builds. There'll be a DI2 model with hydraulic and head jet wheels, and the prices range all the way from $8,000 down to $4,800. Delivery is slated for January. Pre-orders are being taken now. UK and AU pricing was not immediately available. Whew!
I got a bike that'll beat that.
It has a motor.
Peugeot, proud to unveil the EU01S, a 45-kilometer-per-hour electric bicycle that gives unrivaled versatility and speed, bridging the gap between traditional 25-kilometer-per-hour electric bicycles and scooters. And then it goes on to explain that it's going to be presented in December at the Paris Motor Show and launched at the end of 2016. You'll be able to get it in Europe. Not quite sure how to get it here in the U.S. yet. But
fly to France.
Okay. Yeah, you could do that. The interesting thing is now we have a category for electric bikes.
Right.
We now have up to 25 kilometers and then beyond 25
kilometers.
And it's just, this is, can't we just all pedal?
Ta-da.
We're done.
Okay. We need to take a quick break. We will be back to talk with Eric Weiss about the Builders Ball, the New England Builders Ball. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We are heading over to New England, and we are going to speak with Eric Weiss. Hi, Eric. Welcome back to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, I'm so glad you invited me back, Diane. Thank you for having me.
Well, we spoke actually more than a year ago. It was last August. And you've changed some hats and you're doing some new stuff. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with you. And, you know, you're leaving the East Coast Greenway position.
Things are a little different for me today than they were a year ago today. So after 18 years on staff at the East Coast Green, including most recently being the director of Greenway development for this Maine to Florida 2,900-mile trail connecting cities mega project, I moved in June from staff to advisory board. And I put in my 18 years and I hung up my hat. And it's still a mission I stand very proudly behind, but not 10 hours a day.
Wow, I know nothing about that.
Right.
You know, 18 years is a long time, and a lot has been accomplished in that time at the East Coast Greenway. I think you left it at a good time. So tell us where you are now and what you're doing.
Well, I did something really special for myself. My last day of work was June 30th, and I proceeded to take 3 months off. So 2.5 months of that are done. And I figure after 18 years of nose to the grindstone, nonprofit culture, I deserve to take the summer off. I wanted to do something nice for myself and frankly for my family as well. So I've been doing some volunteering. I've been doing my civic work here in Providence, which includes being the chair of the City of Providence Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Commission.
And so like you've been doing nothing, right?
I'm sorry, say that.
So you again? Like you've been doing nothing, right?
You know, it's funny. All my life I've been hearing people say, "Oh, I retired and I've been busier than ever."
Right.
And now I kind of get it. I'm not retired. I'm just, you know, I'm taking a few months off, but I totally get it. I've been as busy as ever and still haven't done half the stuff that I wanted to do, including taking a couple bike trips over the summer. So yeah, I won't roll my eyes at retirees anymore when they tell me how busy they are.
Well, I allegedly retired from the bicycle shop in 2012, and I can't even find 10 minutes to make a call to the, you know, utility company to have something changed. It's like, really?
It's
where's
really
all
something.
That time? So last year and this year, you have invited me to the Builders Ball. The KMC Cyclocross Fest is at the same time. And both years I have turned you down. But I have made you a promise that I will be out there in 2017.
I'm gonna hold you to that.
I know you are, and so is Richard, evidently. So I want to talk about the event because it is a really interesting and unusual event. The Builders Ball, the New England Builders Ball, is the only really hand-built show on the East Coast. Tell us about it and how you are involved with it.
Well, it's not the only one on the whole East Coast, but it's definitely the only one in New England. And the origin is me at a conference or a meeting, and Richard Fries, who you just mentioned, was there as well. And I was whining, how come the North American Handbuilt Bike Show never comes to New England? This is like 6 or 7 years ago. And I was being complainy. It was not productive or constructive. And Richard turned to me and said, stop whining. If you're not happy, just do something about it. And if you're going to do something about it, make it coincide with the Providence Cyclocross Festival.
Well, how quaint, right? What an idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that was 6 years ago. And so we're about to pull off our sixth edition of the New England Builders Ball, still allied with the Cyclocross Festival, which now has a new name. It's KMC Cross Fest.
Right.
And looking forward to the best show yet, Friday, September 30th. At Thompson Speedway in the, what we call the quiet corner of Connecticut, the very northeast corner.
In Thompson, Connecticut, actually.
Exactly.
So are we going to have that announcer who goes, Sunday at the Thompson Speedway? That crazy announcer like
right,
I had
right.
when I was growing
Sunday,
up.
Sunday.
Yeah, right. That was
yeah,
so
exactly.
cool.
Now, that would be a lot of fun.
It
for
would
the,
be.
For the call-ups, it would be like, Powers.
Yeah, I hear he's thinking about retiring this year.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Is he going to retire?
I haven't heard that, but if he does, he certainly earned his retirement.
Yeah, I you know what? We just had a conversation about retirement. Nobody wants to retire these days. You get too busy, right? So who is going to be at the Builders Ball this year? Who's sort of signed up and some of the people we might know and maybe might not know?
Well, it's a mix. So it's people and companies who are known around the world that are based in New England, such as Richard Sachs, Peter Weigel, Parley, which is known around the world for their carbon frames. They'll all be at the show. And it's also more regional builders, companies like Chapman Cycles out of Rhode Island and Breismeister Bikes out of New York. We've got one I'm really excited about, a new exhibitor, is Bamboo Bicycles Boston, where you can sign up, take a class, and your graduation is that you have built yourself a bamboo bicycle.
Yeah, a lot of that's going on. I think that's really cool.
It's really cool. And we have a nice assortment of component and accessory makers as well, a couple bag makers, and there's people making lighting and sine waves will be back. They sell a little gadget where you plug it into your generator hub on one end and USB. You can plug your USB device in the other end, so you can keep your smartphone powered all day long, running your GPS program.
And I actually saw that device, and I think it's really clever. I saw it when I was at NABS last year.
It's a terrific device. I bought one myself for touring. And one of the nice things about it is that once you get to the point where you don't need your directions anymore, you can switch from GPS to blasting music.
Well, we're here.
Your last 5 or 10 miles, you can, crank up the AC/DC or whatever you like to power you to the end of your daily ride.
One of the things that that you mentioned, and you mentioned it on the site itself, the New England Builders Ball site, is that the Builders Ball itself is actually Friday night, right?
That's right. It's a Friday night of CrossFest weekend. There are races on Friday. So most of the racing is Saturday and Sunday. Friday's races will be like the Cyclocross Madison and the single speed race. There may be collegiate races on Friday, too. I'm not sure.
Oh, cool.
And the last race, the Builders Ball opens at 7 p.m. to the public. The last race of the day starts at 7, and it actually cuts through the building with the Builders Ball. So the first 45 minutes of New England's only hand-built bike show, you can be chatting with a frame builder, and there will be racers zooming by you. One end of the building.
So you need to explain that this is in a large barn structure. So that we're not getting run over by these cyclists.
Yes. You're not going to have to cross the course to get from one exhibitor to the other. It's down at one end of the building. And the ball itself, the venue this year, is by day a 26-car garage for race cars. This is a historic racetrack. It has both an oval and a road track, and it was the first paved oval in North America.
Wow.
With a banked track. So it's steeped in car racing history. And they've got this enormous garage, which I am going to transform into a really unique setting for a hand-built show.
Now I'm really feeling badly that I'm not going to be there. Now I'm feeling like I'm one inch tall.
So you just have to keep an eye on the Builders Ball Instagram all night long.
Okay, that's a good idea.
It'll feel like you're there.
Yeah, right. And then I'll feel even worse. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Eric Weiss. He is out on the East Coast. We're talking about the Builders Ball coming up September 30th in Thompson, Connecticut at the Thompson Motor Speedway. So there are also going to be vendors. Now, this year, vendors are going to be allowed to stay longer inside the barn. Is that what's going to happen?
Right. So because this is the first year at a new venue, it's a sort of a transitional year for KMC CrossFest and for the Builders Ball. We're continuing this partnership. And KMC CrossFest has been very generous in saying that any any maker that is an exhibitor at the Builders Ball Friday night is welcome to keep their booth all weekend long, all Saturday and Sunday, at no additional cost. That's going to be this year only. But of course, there is an additional expo, a traditional expo that runs all weekend long as well. International corporations that build so much of the first class stuff that you see in your independent bike dealer's shop. So Shimano will be there, Cannondale, Kenda Tire, KMC Chain. We're expecting SRAM will show up. Focus will be there, Stan Snow Tubes. There'll be a number of shops there offering great deals on stuff they didn't sell this summer. CHS, Yakima, Louis Garneau, the list goes on and on.
Wow.
And,
wow.
It's going to be a great expo and in a really great venue.
Any good food?
Yes. Well, this being a, you know, a private venue, a racetrack with an adjacent golf course, there's a clubhouse.
Oh.
So people can watch the race and stroll over to the clubhouse, get themselves, you know, traditional, like, golf clubhouse lunch and beer. There will also be beer sold away from the restaurant, so you can be watching the race from either the NASCAR-style grandstand or anywhere else that you want to walk around the course, go over to the barrier area or go over to the drop-in or be in the expo area. And there will be, you know, you can have food and beer and really enjoy an amazing weekend of first-class cyclocross racing.
Wow. It just sounds like so much fun. I saw a little bit of cyclocross this past week. We had an event here down at our lakefront at Edgewater Park, and it was fun, too. You going to have any drones? We had a drone flying over us this past weekend. It was weird.
It's funny. If the wind cooperates, if the weather cooperates, yes, there will be a drone collecting video. But you know what? Cyclocross is by far the most fan-friendly
yes.
of all the cycling disciplines.
Yes.
And so no matter, you don't need that drone footage to have a great time. You just show up, you find a place to sit to watch for a while, and you move to some other spot where there's some other challenge for the racers. And so you can spend some time at the drop-in. And by the way, the drop-in at this new course rivals anything that you've seen while streaming, you know, world championships from Belgium or the Czech Republic. It's crazy. It's going to be amazing for spectators.
Well, so one more time, let's give our listeners a way to figure out where it is, when it is, and maybe we'll even have some people come in from outside of the East Coast area. I know you're expecting a lot of people, but the more the merrier, right?
Absolutely. So I'd encourage people to go to newenglandbuildersball.com, learn a lot more there, or find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. You can see the full list of exhibitors and see what time it is. Again, only $5 to get into the show. And it is the most unique hand-built show going, particularly now with the racing cutting through for part of the evening. People can learn more about CrossFest by going to kmccrossfest.com.
Yeah, and we did not mention that actually there is a portion of the weekend that benefits, wait for it, the East Coast Greenway.
That's right. I may not be on staff of East Coast Greenway
right.
anymore, but being an advisory board member, I have this obligation. And, of course, the East Coast Greenway will always be near and dear to my heart. So the Builders Ball continues to be a benefit for the East Coast Greenway Alliance. So your $5 that you slap down to get in, as well as what you pay for your beer once you're inside the Builders Ball, that helps raise funds for the East Coast Greenway.
Wow. Well, Eric, it is so good to talk to you again, and I promise I'll be there next year. I promise.
I'll look forward to seeing you.
All right.
Diane.
Take care. Have a great weekend on the 30th.
I hope to. Thank you so much, Diane.
Okay. Bye-bye, Eric.
Bye.
Eric Weiss joined me from his perch in New England. We're not going to say where he is because he's not actually working. I mean, well, he is working, but he's not working. He's still on sabbatical for, what, a half a month?
He's still somewhere in New England, though, right?
Yes, he is. Yeah. Preparing for the New England Builders Ball. What an interesting year it's going to be out there.
I think that's really cool that the first 45 minutes of the race actually go through the hall. To me, that's just,
yeah,
that's awesome.
You're grinning.
Is really cool.
All right. We need to take a quick break, and then we will be back. We will be talking with Kelly Hodgson, who is up in Alberta, eh?
Ootinaboot.
Ootinaboot. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. Hi, Kelly. Thanks for joining me on The Outspoken Cyclist this week. It's my pleasure. Tell us a little bit about United Cycle Sport and Sports Central.
So United Cycle was founded in 1928, and we were one of the founding members of Sports Central that started 25 years ago. We serve as a link between Sports Central and the sporting goods industry. So there's numbers of ways that we can help Sports Central exist that links back to the sporting goods industry as a whole.
So Sports Central is a nonprofit?
Yeah, Sports Central is a nonprofit that operates on its own and looks to gently used sporting equipment and refurbishes it with a group of volunteers that they have and gets it back out to kids in need.
So, and United Cycle Sport is a retail organization?
Yeah, United Cycle Sport is completely separate from Sports Central.
Okay.
and exists as a retailer, sporting goods retailer. Yeah,
yeah, and you're up in Edmonton in Canada.
Yeah, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Yeah.
You betcha.
You betcha. I bet you are.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are actually going to talk about something that happened. I guess it was a year ago, a fire. Tell us a little bit about that fire and what Cycle Sport and Sports Central decided to do.
Yeah, so the fire was a huge tragedy, obviously, for Northern Alberta. It affected so many people, and so immediately after the fire, we got together with Sports Central, and we identified that while amazing as it was that Red Cross was helping and getting people back on their feet, in the immediate, ensuring that they had a place to land once they had to leave Fort McMurray, we also wanted to address the need of sport and active living that these people are going to have to go through that most likely would not get addressed by organizations such as Red Cross. So, like I say, within a few days of that happening, we teamed up with Sports Central and we came up with the campaign Sport for the North that would see us ask the community and our industry. So when I say industry, I mean that our suppliers who provide us with equipment such as CCM hockey, for instance. We go to the community, we go to the industry, and we said we need to get Fort McMurray and Northern Alberta up and running again. And that ask was well received by both the community and the industry to a point where we set a fairly lofty goal, we thought at that point, of $500,000 in new or gently used sports equipment.
How many people were affected by this fire and what caused the fire?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know what caused the
okay.
fire, and the numbers are still not even constant. I mean, what I can tell you is that 1,600 homes were lost. So that is
wow.
people that, were reduced to nothing. But how it's grown past that, somebody who is, potentially lost a job because of it or maybe their house is partially damaged or their business is partially damaged. I mean, those numbers are still growing as we speak and the after effects, continue to grow.
Wow, that's really sad. Really sad.
Yeah.
But you guys seem to have really stepped up. You met your goal, $500,000 in sports equipment. What did you collect besides hockey stuff? Did you get bikes and
yeah, so the main contributors in that one were hockey, baseball, football, and bicycles, as well as clothing. So whether it be sports clothing or just general athletic clothing, maybe, sweatpants, sweatshirts, that kind of stuff. that also fit into that as well, because we knew that coming out of the fire and into the rebuilding process, which is essentially right about now as we're speaking, is kids are going back to football. They're going back to hockey, and or at least they'd like to, right? And one of the most immediate things that we're able to make an impact with was Fort McMurray Minor Ball Association, is that we got teams back on the diamonds within weeks of the fire.
Wow, that's really good. That's really good. So evidently the trailer was loaded up this past week, 53-foot trailer, $500,000 worth of equipment. What was the reception like when you came into Fort McMurray with all this stuff?
Yeah, so it can be summed up in one word and then in two words. The first word is wow.
Right.
People could not believe it. And then so the emotion of wow soon turned into the second one, and that is tears and cheers. When we cracked the doors open on the 53-foot Rosno trailer, and then we also had a 16-foot United Cycle trailer there, was also filled with a bunch of stuff, is that people were just overwhelmed with emotion. It is a feeling that by some who were devastated right to the very, very bitter end, to now they can start to see rebuild. And then so president of Fort McMurray Minor Ball Association, president of Fort McMurray Minor Hockey Association, all people like that on site, and they can see their programs now have an opportunity to rebuild. And we have to understand, too, that just because that inventory is there now doesn't mean their programs are rebuilt and up and running again. This need in Fort McMurray and Northern Alberta is going to be long-lasting, and as one opportunity gets fulfilled, another opportunity will creep on, and so it's important that when we did this with Sports Central and Northern Alberta Fort McMurray, that we established a legacy. It wasn't just a one-off. It wasn't just something that satisfies an immediate need, but we've established a legacy there where we can see the need of residents in Fort McMurray and Northern Alberta being fulfilled for years to come.
Well, how can people who listen to this show learn more about what's going on in Fort McMurray and perhaps help out? I take it you are still taking donations?
Yeah, so the Sport for the North campaign still exists, and it will exist for a while to come yet, for sure. We've made one big donation delivery, as you've alluded to, but we forecast ourselves being up there again, and we're looking to work with Fort McMurray and Sports Central and stuff, and looking at a satellite location up in Fort McMurray that can continue to meet the need of people in Northern Alberta. But for right now, how you can get involved, you can go to sportscentral.org. That's their website. They have a Sport for the North web banner on there that tells a little bit of the story. UnitedCycle.com, you can find Sport for the North information on there as well. And we hope to have more and more information to come as the needs change and evolve over time.
Well, I think you're doing a wonderful thing. I really appreciate you spending time talking with me about it today. And keep up the great work. We will do our best to get the word out there for you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a great afternoon.
Yes, you as well.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Kelly Hodgson joined me from his office at United Cycle up in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. It's a great thing they and Sport United are doing. I'd like to thank him. I'd like to thank Richard Fries and Eric Weiss for being our guests this week. I hope you have a chance to go out for a ride. It's a beautiful time of year. We will have a show all about transportation next week as we welcome Barbara McCann and some other guests. So thanks so much for listening. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.